This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The BFM Breakfast Grill. Top interviews you can't afford to miss. Presented by the CIMB Group.
With us on the Breakfast Grill this morning is Ian Angel, CEO for Tamarind Energy. Tamarind Energy came into the spotlight when it formed an $800 million partnership with Blackstone Energy Partners to focus on oil and gas exploration in Southeast Asia. Blackstone doesn't need an introduction, but the same can't be said for Tamarind. So we'll get an update on what's been done thus far and answer the question, who is Tamarind? So good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
Back to the main question. So who is Tamarind? Who are the people behind Tamarind? Because out of the blue, I mean, Blackstone is such a well-known name. How did you get them into the picture? I mean, some background on the company.
Well, sure. Let me start off a little bit with Tamarind Energy. Tamarind Energy is a Southeast Asia-focused oil and gas company. So we only want to do business in this part of the world. It's a part of the world we all know well. Our team of about 10 executives, all of us have worked in the region somewhere between the minimum would be 3 years and some of us our whole lives, our Malaysian counterparts, of course. The key thing that makes Tamarind different is that we want to focus on things that are not as straightforward. We're happy to take on challenges, and by challenges we mean maybe oil fields that are a bit remote, a bit tougher to develop. I always like to call it the too hard basket. And but we're also willing to take on, you know, projects that others say, how do we go about doing that? So our expertise, the guys on my team, are very good at doing creative, innovative developments.
Some snapshots on your, probably the expertise you have, because not much is known about Tamarind. There will be questions over your expertise. I know Talisman Energy, which is very well known in Canada, is counted as the place you came from, as in like where you were working previously. But what about the rest of your team? What kind of experience do they all have?
Well, quite a few members of our team are Canadian, coming from Talisman, as you mentioned. My background was with Talisman Energy for the last 6 years. We're very proud of our relationships, and we have many, many friends there. Talisman is one of the top four or five companies operating in Malaysia, Indonesia, and in Vietnam, as well as Papua New Guinea. Our team, a number of the team members were approaching retirement age, or early retirement in the oil and gas industry, as often happens. And we all felt that there was an exciting opportunity available to build our own oil company, by adding to the experience that we all have. And so our team is a mixture of geologists and explorers. Our team is a mixture of engineers who know how to build things in difficult offshore environments. Reservoir engineering, which is how do you get the oil out of the ground more effectively, faster, at lower cost. Commercial people, how do we, negotiate, make sure the contracts we do are good for both parties. We also have people with a very strong background in marketing, which in oil means can you get, the right markets for the oil to get the best premiums you can. But on natural gas is more, can we work in Malaysia, Vietnam, Indonesia to help meet the country's power demands primarily, but also industrial demands in places like Kertih. So our team has a broad background across all of the things that you would want in an oil company. And most important in my view is quite a few of us have worked together for a long time. And therefore, we kind of know each other a bit like a marriage.
But you didn't just wake up one day and said, shall we do an oil and gas company?
No, you hear all of these great stories about entrepreneurs where they have an epiphany, They wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, why don't we do this? I would say ours was more thoughtful, a bit more evolved. What we've noticed over the last probably 3 years in this part of the world is that there's a number of macro trends which are impacting Malaysia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand. The first macro trend is that a lot of the independent oil companies, IOCs they call them, are consolidating back to their home positions. And the big examples that we've seen in Malaysia are, Newfield's sale to Sepuluh Kencana.
Yes, Newfield's sales because they wanted to concentrate back on business in the States.
You got it. Murphy announced a 30% sale of their Malaysian portfolio to Pertamina. We've seen Hess sell their Indonesian and Thai assets. We've seen a number of other companies sort of make decisions, Anadarko and others, to sell their Asian portfolio and move back to North America. Now, why are they doing that? A lot of people ask me that question because they say, well, does that mean that Asia is bad? Does that mean you shouldn't invest in Asia? And I say, no, please do not get the story wrong. The right answer is that North America is going through an amazing renaissance of oil.
You talk about the shale revolution, right? Well, how it's the main game changer that it's in the industry. But now OPEC are refusing to cut production. As a result, will this revolution actually take place? I mean, it had a good start, but is this going to stop it in its tracks?
Well, I think like any revolution, it's very hard to stop once it's started. And both on gas and oil, the revolution is well underway. I think it will continue. In fact, I was recently talking to one of my colleagues in North America, and he was talking about how despite what OPEC wants to do, the technology and the knowledge that the shale players are gaining is moving much faster than OPEC's ability to cause problems. And so I'm a firm believer that, you know, both in oil and gas, unconventional opportunities will continue. I think the point that needs to be made as well, though, is that gas has not been infected. So the oil prices come down, but natural gas prices are pretty much staying where they were in North America. And so it's really only affecting, this whole unconventional problem or shale problem is only affecting oil in North America right now. The gas is sort of carrying on as it was.
But the thing is, right, people see it as basically fruit from the same tree, right? It's the same industry in general. So they're talking about pain points. What's the pain point for the shale gas and the shale oil producers? They're saying about $65. Is that about right?
Yeah. So if you look at, there's a number of studies out there that says somewhere between $60 and $80, and every analyst has a different number, of course. But I think what you need to realize, it's like buying, durian in KL. You know, you can go to the best durian place where everybody really knows that the durian is a perfect one, and the price will be very high. But you can go out to the countryside and drive to a kampong and maybe get some durian that are not so nice, and they'll be very, very, very cheap. So the same as shale. Not all shale fields are the same. And so some might cost $80 to produce, but others, the producer will still be making money at $60, maybe even $50 or $40. So there's a wide spectrum, but I think the $65 number is a good number, and I've heard it from a number of reports.
Because Tamarind Energy seemed to essentially pop out of nowhere, what was it that you said to them that convinced them to part with the money or convinced them that you were worth investing in, aside from the fact that it was a meeting of the minds? What could finally swayed them?
I think, of course, we'd all like to say, well, it was the brilliance of our management team. Now, of course, I'm just joking. But I think the key thing that persuaded Blackstone and was very compelling to the other funds we talked to is we were able to exhibit to them that there's significant opportunity in Southeast Asia. And in Southeast Asia, the kinds of opportunities that we're looking at are really two. There's many, many fields in this region, Malaysia, Indonesia, where they've been produced for many years. In fact, some very large fields have been produced for 15, 20 plus years. But despite that, there's lots of remaining oil. But to go after that remaining oil, you actually have to squeeze. I always use the term a dish rag. You know, you have to squeeze that dish rag very, very hard to get additional liquid out of it. To do that, you have to take a very careful and thoughtful approach. If you just go in and do the same old thing, you won't be successful. So you have to be very intensive about managing the sand or the reservoir underneath. You have to be very capital intensive because you actually have to spend a lot more money later in the field than you do at the beginning of a field. The third thing you have to do is be also very conscious of what I would call the national capability. So for us to be successful, we have to work very closely with Malaysian companies, with Indonesian service providers, and say, okay, guys, if we're going to get this last oil out of the ground on some of these old fields, we need new skills, new capabilities that haven't been available here before. And so we're working on helping Malaysian companies build those capabilities, and then we will hire them to do these things.
On the investment by Blackstone, what are the conditions tied to it? Do they give you a milestone path that you have to reach in order for the capitalization of the money?
Yeah, I think the key point is that the nature of a business like we have with Blackstone isn't really an arm, you know, it's much more of a partnership. And so we talk to our investor every day. We're sharing with them on a daily basis our ideas that we're looking at. They give us real-time feedback. So, of course, we have a board and all of those normal things. But because we're a private company with one large investor, we can actually have much more of a day-to-day relationship. So as we're thinking about things, they come back to us and say, yeah, okay, I like that one, or maybe not. And we can then work on things in a much more streamlined basis, where I think a lot of companies that maybe have a large number of different investors, or a public company in many cases, for them to be able to take the pulse of their investors is very hard. We're very lucky. We can pick up the phone and take the pulse of our investor every day.
We'll talk more about developing partnerships and, of course, challenges going forward. But with us on the Breakfast Grill this morning is Ian Angel, CEO of Tamarind Energy. Now, when we were left it, we were talking about how hands-on Blackstone was. So they are the major shareholders of Tamarind Energy, correct?
Yes.
Who else is there in terms of shareholders? Do you and the board hold any stake in the company?
I think for any company, a startup, an entrepreneurial venture to be successful, you want to have the management team and the board committed. I'm pleased to say that all of our management team has made significant personal investments in the business. Of course, you know, against the backdrop of the size that Blackstone is, you know, on a percentage basis, our investments are not that big in terms of the overall company equity. But for each of us personally, I can tell you we've had to make significant commitments to the company, and we're all pleased to do that. We're quite excited about the opportunities in the region and what that should mean for us and our families.
Blackstone's in it for the long term. They've told you as much?
No question. One of the things that a lot of misconceptions, I would say, that a lot of people have about private equity
is they flip.
Yeah, they kind of think, well, they're in and out, you know, and sort of, you know, like the butterflies we have or the moths we have here in KL. That's not true. One of the things that really impressed us about Blackstone was that their investment horizon is indeed what any of us would call medium to long term, 5-7 plus years. So we're in no rush to do deals. We want to do the right deals. We can take true investments. We can take projects that have a gestation period of 3-5 years to come off, and we can invest alongside others that have similar time frames. So we're not feeling any acute pressure to find deals that are quick flips or anything like that. We can make proper investment decisions. We can build proper assets and make sure we manage the oil and gas fields that come under our care. We can manage them very carefully.
But do you feel a pressure to get a local partner, though? I mean, business being run in a certain way, I mean, a lot of people perceive that. But do you feel the pressure to team up with somebody local or get some local expertise in order to get deals?
Well, let me talk about expertise first. Indeed, we will be partnering and already, you know, have a number of very strong relationships with local Malaysian, Indonesian regional suppliers. A good example of that would be great Malaysian companies like Sapura Kencana, Dialog, and others. We know them very well from our previous experience in the region. And we are incredibly excited about how fast those companies are growing and very happy to be part of that. On the investing partner side, we're also quite encouraged that a number of the Malaysian companies are growing at the same time we are. We've seen the tremendous growth of the SPACs or these new special purpose oil and gas companies.
Hibiscus and Reach, for example.
Hibiscus and Reach and others. But we are also seeing that many of the Malaysian firms, such as GOM and others, are also trying to build oil and gas divisions. And we know our Malaysian friends and colleagues, our neighbors, and we're very excited about forming partnerships with them if it makes sense for both parties.
Investing also, if they wanted to buy a stake, that would definitely be on the cards?
I think what you find about oil and gas is a little different maybe than other industries, where usually you tend to take a stake together in a project. You don't see as much stakes at the corporate level. And so what we find is we're, instead of having somebody take a stake in Tamarind, we're better off to both put money into a project. Then we get oil out of the ground, gas out of the ground. Malaysian government makes money from taxes and royalties. Petronas makes money because they're our partner. But we actually get production and we make activity in the country. Where sometimes if you just take a stake at the company level, it takes longer for the activity to occur. I'd rather put the dollars in the ground.
Will there be a delay then in your acquisition of a new asset?
I think, you know, certainly while we recognize that lower oil price is certainly causing the industry some challenges, we certainly view it as an opportunity. Of course, we are in acquisition mode and partnering mode. So we think that we'll be able to actually, hopefully make some good deals now that the oil price is down. But more importantly, we'll be able to partner with companies in the region to help them, you know, carry on even though the price is low. I think for us, you know, given where we are in our early stage of creating the company, I think it certainly is not bad news for us.
When will you think you'll announce the acquisition of the asset then?
I think our goal is we're still doing our homework. You know, like every good student, we have to do lots of homework before the exam. And, you know, I think also what you'll see is that the instability, in our view, will continue for the next few months. And we're going to be not rushing into any deals at this time. But, you know, that's not to say that we wouldn't be able to move very fast if something does come along.
There are other competitors. There's Ping Petroleum, KrisEnergy. I think they are also in the slightly smaller space. How do you distinguish yourself from the rest, besides the fact that you say that you take on projects that are too hard? I mean, what do you feel you can offer the edge that the others can't?
Well, I think that's a great question. One of the unique things about the oil and gas industry, it's not really an industry of competition. It's an industry of partnerships. On most oil and gas fields around the world, you'll find that you have a number of partners. And so instead of thinking of Ping and Reach or Sapura Quinchana or KrisEnergy as competitors, actually we know those guys all very well. We actually see them as partners. In many cases, we will come together with those companies to drive a project forward. So our industry is a bit unique that way in that it's not competition in the normal sense. We find that each company has its own specific niche and that you have to work with companies who are good at other things and then come together. So from my perspective, if you look at KrisEnergy, you know, they're very good at Thailand, they're in Bangladesh and other parts of the region where we're not as strong. We're in Malaysia and we know Indonesia well. So you can always find geographic mix to form a partnership, but you can also find expertise. Some of these companies that you talk about are maybe a bit more exploration focused than us. We're more development and production focused. So again, you'll have partnerships around who knows how to do which things.
But of course, in the region, especially for Malaysia, you don't move in oil and gas without getting the say of Petronas. Petronas has come out to say that it will slow down its capex. I think all the big oil players have also said the same. They're going to relook at their capex plans. How will Tamarind take this? I mean, is it going to be a big issue?
No, I think for us that you've just nailed the opportunity right on the head. Tamarind, as you know, has a very strong backer in Blackstone, and with $800 million of equity investment plus the bank debt that we'll be able to bring to projects, you know, we hope to fill that void for Petronas in Malaysia and for other countries in the region. So if the big guys are pulling back their capital, well, it's a perfect time for us to step in and make those investments.
But how long can you continue to kind of do that? I mean, if the few months that you mentioned as an outlook still remain that dire in terms of the oil and gas?
Well, I think what you need to realize in the oil and gas industry, if I'm investing in new capacity today, it's probably about 3 to 4 years until I find that the outcomes of that capacity are hitting the market. So if I'm starting a brand new project today, it's probably between three and four years till I'd produce my first barrel of oil from that project. So, you know, even though we can invest today, by the time we bring that oil field on, the price should be much stronger. I think the other thing that a lot of people aren't talking about is when the oil price goes down, also the cost of projects goes down as well. And so we're already seeing that drilling rigs, for example, other supplies are becoming cheaper on a global basis and in Malaysia already. So we recognize that we're going to take advantage of those lower costs and push forward on investments.
Based on your internal reports, how long do you see the oil and gas slump actually taking place?
Oh, I think, I'm a firm believer that, you should leave the professional jobs to the professionals. I think we see, I can't predict precisely how long it's going to carry on or how low it's going to go. You know, there's lots of guys that do that for a living, and most of them get it wrong as well. But we're certainly prepared for a medium term, and by that I would say 12-month slump at least. But we may be very wrong.
In Indonesia, Malaysia, red tape is always seemed to be a little bit of an issue. Does that concern Tamarind Energy? I mean, you've had experience in working here before, so it's definitely not new to you. But, you know, when it comes to doing this kind of thing, is that a worry? Is that something you would ask the government to probably streamline if you could?
I would say that a lot of, Western companies that come over here for the first time, they make a lot of squawking noises about red tape. In our experience, the Malaysian and Indonesian rules are quite clear. A lot of people try to circumvent those rules based on how they do things in Alberta or Texas or the North Sea. Well, this isn't Alberta or Texas or the North Sea. This is Malaysia and Indonesia, Vietnam, Thailand. And if we don't appreciate what the local government's trying to accomplish, then we shouldn't do business here. So my opinion is we have strong Malaysians on our management team. Datuk Rahizak Shafi is one of our senior executives. He's one of the best managers in Malaysia with regard to working with local suppliers and procurement and making sure that we understand the rules that Petronas and others have put in front of us. So I don't think you have any excuse to try and break the rules, but you do have a duty to understand them and move quite quickly.
And one final thing, there was a report that Rock Oil Petroleum, Tamarind's name came up, is to bid for a stake in that. Is that true or not?
I think there was a lot of speculation when people came around and, when Tamarind was coming into to life in July and August, everybody, all of the your colleagues in the financial industry were all, chasing ideas. I can say, of course, as I said, we look at everything, but we weren't specifically looking at Rock.
Well, with us on the Breakfast Grill this morning is Ian Angel, CEO for Tamarind Energy. Thank you very much, Ian, for your insights this morning. I'm Nadia Hassan, and this has been BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.